This week on Buffy the Gilmore Slayer.
You got crazy hair? Oh, I'm a scaredy girl.
Hello, and welcome to Buffy the Gilmore Slayer.
I'm Brian Morris.
I'm Stacey Kulo.
We're comedians.
And a couple.
And I just watched Gilmore Girls, one of Stacey's favorite shows, for the very first time.
And I just watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, one of Brian's favorite shows, for the very first time.
We watched both shows together all 7 seasons, comparing them as we went.
And now we're watching and comparing 2 other shows from the creators of those 2 shows, Amy Sherman-Palladino's Bunheads
and Joss Whedon's Firefly.
And this week, we are discussing episode 7 of both shows, starting with Bunheads, What's Your Damage, Heather?
As well as Firefly, Janestown.
I actually don't get the What's Your Damage, Heather reference. Michelle shames Sasha for not knowing it, but I am somewhere in between them age-wise. Do you know?
I'm Googling it. Apparently, it's used in Gilmore Girls at some point. I guess it is from the movie Heathers.
That's kind of what my guess was, but I've only seen that once and somewhat recently. Yeah, once Michelle put it in context, I was like, I bet it's from Heathers.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
Okay.
Well, just to keep you guys in the loop, I just spilled coffee all over my desk and quickly cleaned it up, but it does still sneak.
It sneaks. The coffee keeps sneaking. You didn't get it all.
It still reeks of coffee right now, and I'm in a bad mood because I don't have my coffee, and I'm going to have to clean this desk as soon as we're done.
Do you want some of my coffee?
No, I want to be mad about it.
Okay. You somehow didn't get it on any vital electrical equipment, though.
No, I really did as little damage I could while making a huge mess still.
Yeah. One thing that came up, I guess, a couple episodes ago, which is like a month ago by the time you're hearing this, is the fact that in the episode where Michelle is like insisting she doesn't want to teach, a couple of you pointed out that it's because once she teaches, that means she's giving up on her own dancing career. Because Fanny has a line that's like, you know, just because you teach doesn't mean it's over. And I think we did kind of forget that specific line. So I do think it is pretty clear why she doesn't want to. But I will say she has committed at this point to staying in this town, it seems. Whether it's out of obligation to Fanny or like guilt over potentially abandoning Fanny and also like all these girls that depend on Fanny.
I don't even know if it has anything to do with Fanny. She like gave up on her life and left.
Yeah.
Because of that bad audition, which to me very much was her saying, like, I'm done with that part of my life.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make it. So for people to say it's because she doesn't want to, like, admit that her career's over, I get that was, like, hinted at. But she's already done that.
Yeah.
Like, everything she's done has already told herself and her life that she's done being a dancer. So it doesn't seem like it's much more of a leap to, like, just actually teach.
She definitely seems adrift and like doesn't know what her next move is going to be. And I don't think she's like said she doesn't want to dance, but she also isn't like coming up with plans to go try to make it in New York again. Like she seems like, I'm staying here. I'm setting up shop in this house. So it just seems like obvious that she should teach. And I don't know why she isn't considering that. But I get that. Totally. Like, I don't know. I guess it's probably the same for like our line of work too, you know, to just be like, well, I'm going to be an acting teacher, an improv teacher now.
Right. I would love to be an improv teacher to get paid for make-believe. Oh, my God.
You were an improv teacher.
I know, but I didn't get paid.
Is that? Yeah, that is true. It's not a cult, guys.
It's not a cult.
We did it for the love of our leader. By the time this comes out, that's been done for like a half a month. But in the next episode, we'll let you know how it went. We're recording a few of these before we actually go on that trip because we'll be busy for a week. Oh my, we should talk about Dune without going too deep into Dune, but the experience was an experience.
So we went to a 4D movie, which means the seats move, they spray water, there's like air jets behind you and under your legs. So it's sort of like a roller coaster movie kind of situation. And they have smells, although I honestly feel like their smell machine was broken.
Yeah, I only really noticed a couple different smells they were trying to do. I think when there was like water, they would kind of have mist, and I actually enjoyed that. But anytime there was fire, there was this smell that was, like, not any kind of natural smell. It was just very, like, fruity or something.
Well, there was a part where someone was making a Pop-Tart. This is not in Dune. This is in a preview that was designed to, like, showcase all the things the movie can do. And they like lingered on this Pop-Tart to like let you know that's what you're smelling. But there was no Pop-Tart smell at all.
Mm.
I was like, something's, they're out of Pop-Tart juice or something.
And then the rest of the movie, you just couldn't stop playing Pop-Tart smells.
I guess it was already locked and loaded.
But the movement that you're imagining, it's just, it's so much more than you think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think everybody would be into this. Like, there were a few previews, and then they had like a video to show off all the features of this theater, just to kind of give you an idea of what to expect, which I think is a good idea, because I do think some people definitely left.
Straight up left right after this.
Yeah. I enjoyed the like sort of motion movement of it, because like Dune, there's a lot of like flying over the desert. That, I think, really enhanced the experience. You know, when it was like a, like almost like a roller coaster turning and banking type thing. But the seats would also move quite a bit during like fight scenes.
Yeah, too much. It distracted me.
If you imagine like a massage chair where you're like getting kind of punched in the back, that was happening as well. Like there was a lot of different things happening with the seats.
A massage chair where you're getting punched in the back?
Massage chairs have like little...
Get like sweetest massages?
Yeah, you know massage chairs. There's like the little vibrations in the back. They feel like little fists. And like pretty early on, there's like some random bad guy. This is not a spoiler. Someone gets shot like at a distance. And you get like a puff of air in the back of your head. It's like, holy shit, I didn't know we were getting shot. I think some people left after that, too, because that's, I don't know. I could see that being, like, not pleasant for some.
It was too much. It was too, I feel like it didn't work for me. It was too intense at points where I'm like, I'm trying to watch the fight. Some things it can mimic pretty well, but sometimes I'm like, you can't mimic a sword fight with the movement of a chair.
Right.
So it was sort of just like, okay, things are just kind of random right now.
It did do kind of a cool thing where it would, like, puff your ankles, like in a sword fight. So you almost felt like you were getting your like heel slashed.
Or if you cut someone's throat, like blood would spurt out. I said you, if somebody cut somebody's throat.
Not actual blood.
Yeah, it wasn't. They didn't. No, there was a cow that just kept draining whenever they needed blood. But I will say that the air spurting in my head, in theory, it works. But it's just like a loud air spurt,
mm-hmm.
like little jets of air. But it's too loud and too, like, clearly the sound of air being shot out like a little jet that it takes you out of it. It's like, it's not a gust of wind. That's like a little air gun right behind my ear.
They did have the option to turn off the water. I actually didn't have mine on. You did. But you said there wasn't that much getting sprayed, actually.
Well, we were at Dune, so.
Right. But I think it'd be better if they could somehow turn off various options. Like, I think I would have turned off the air because I kind of didn't enjoy that.
Mm.
Or, like, if you needed a break just to be able to turn off your chair. But I don't know that that would really be possible because you're sort of, like, in a group of four.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did like parts of it. Like, the slow moving was really cool.
But that's, they're never going to be a movie that's like, we're just going to do slow pans. That's what we're going to use all of this for. No, they're going to, like, every movie is going to have the full seat experience. Otherwise, why do we have these options? Which, for me, would be too much.
They did have a few trailers that they used it for. And you had a good point that those were just kind of, like, because trailers just, like, jump around between a lot of different stuff. So those were just, like, constantly shaking. But the movie itself was, like, a lot more thought out.
Yeah, it feels like it makes sense. You understand why you're shaking. I'm like, oh, I'm shaking because I'm on this helicopter. As opposed to just, like, you know, a quick scene where a helicopter, then a quick scene where you're falling, then a scene where there's an explosion. It's just, like, it's just random being shaken right now.
Yeah. But, yeah, if it was just a movie where you're, like, flying over beautiful nature. I mean, it was reminiscent of those, like, theme park rides where you, like, go into this type of chair and you're like watching a giant space movie but you're shaking around. A little better than that. Some good, some bad. Mostly I don't know that I would do it again.
Yeah, I have no need to do it again. Someone would have to tell me this was designed for this movie and it worked perfectly before I would go again. It wasn't like unpleasant, it was just like not worth the extra money.
No, it didn't ruin it at all, but the movie was really good. All right, should we get into shows?
Let's do it.
This week we started with Bunheads. Brian, can you give us a quick summary of What's Your Damage, Heather?
Yes. This episode is about Fanny just asking way too much of her friend Michelle.
And she's not even in this episode.
No, she's not. But her presence is felt via social media anyway.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
There's a running bit that people are like finding out when Fanny is or isn't returning via various social media outlets.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
But she definitely doesn't seem like a person that would use Facebook or Twitter.
You say that now, but she's old.
Yeah, it's also funny because Boo at some point is like, everyone's on Facebook. Like, kind of now, people are getting away from it.
Yeah. It's almost like embarrassing to be like, oh, it's on Facebook. On Facebook, where are you? Are you eating your prunes while you're on Facebook? Having your 5 o'clock dinner? Well, this episode is about Michelle trying to handle all of the classes that they have had to add so they could pay for the theater, in addition to also teaching all of Fanny's classes. If you guys don't remember, Fanny went on vacation in the last episode and sort of just like didn't even tell Michelle that Michelle had to cover her classes. I complained about that already. Episode is also about a couple relationship things going on. There's a new slash familiar face that's dating some people. And there's some romantic triangles and new alignments, romantic alignments in the girl group, the small girl group.
The ballerinas.
The small girls that are in a group together that is also small.
Do you think that Kelly Bishop was like unavailable for a chunk here? Or do you think just like writing wise, this made sense to have her be gone so that Michelle had to take over?
It's hard to say. I feel like it either is possible because it definitely feels like she's gone and like we could have had a scene with her and we don't. But
there was audio of her in this episode and she was credited. And I think it was like a voicemail or there was like an maybe she was on the phone with her. We heard her voice.
Maybe her voicemail.
And then the last episode, she had one scene on the phone where we saw her side of it. But that could have been filmed at any point.
The episode opens with Michelle teaching a bunch of little kids.
These are the little girls. There's just the tiniest girls.
Young children. I don't know what kind of dance, but they're dancing. And then the girls have to pee, and she's like, you shouldn't have to pee. And then it's like, they need... I was afraid they had actually peed themselves on the floor, but there isn't any pee on the floor.
Yeah. She's like, you can't pee when you're in Les Mis. And it's just kind of going over their heads. Because they don't have aspirations to be in Les Mis yet.
Right. Boo is like an assistant now. Was this set up earlier? She's like sort of at the desk helping schedule stuff for Michelle?
Yeah, I wasn't sure because it also seemed like her mom is late in picking her up. So she maybe was just like helping in the meantime.
Her mom is a mess in this episode.
Yeah.
Her mom shows up and she's late. So it's maybe she was late for a previous thing. And so Boo was just helping while she was killing time for her mom. Kind of like you were suggesting, I think. But then like her mom's like, oh, I forgot what day it was. And I'm sorry I'm late. And I brought a bunch of fries that were air cooked for you, Boo. And Boo's like, I don't eat fries. You know that. I'm confused about that. So, like, where do you buy fries that were air-cooked? You either make them yourself, or, like, that's the only thing I can think of. Like, is there a place that makes these?
I think she said she got them from the grocery store, like, the pre-prepared food section. Because didn't she also forget her little brother at the grocery store?
Yeah, that's but do they make air-fried French fries at most grocery stores? Whatever, I guess they might.
This might have been the dawn of the air fryer.
But Boo's like, no, I'm on a diet. I don't eat that. I'm so confused how the mom is constantly, like, confused about her diet. Because she seems pretty strict about it. So I don't know why she keeps being like, eat junk food. Other than that's clearly, like, how she bonds with people, as we'll go into more later.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she thought they were healthy because they were air fried. But Boo's like, I don't eat potatoes.
Well, at the next class, Sasha is nowhere to be found. And so the girls are like, oh, she must have gotten in a lot of trouble for staying out the night before to go to the movie truck. Remember all that dumb shit that didn't make any sense? And she admitted to her dad that she had broken her mom's car. So she's probably in a bunch of trouble now. Ginny is excited because it's her 8-year anniversary with Josh. She's got big plans that night. You know, Josh and her met like in the second grade and been dating ever since. But then she gets a phone call from her mom or Josh. It's not clear. And Josh is stuck at her house, at Ginny's house, helping her mom set up an entertainment system. And it's taking him a long time. And so the word is that he's not going to finish it in time to do their plans for their anniversary. And the mom really wants it done because she's having like a broker meeting at her house the next day. So the mom is like, he's going to stay and do this and then I'll take you guys out for dinner. And she's bummed. Already a lot of questions.
What is going on here? I mean, we get some answers, maybe.
Later, we get some.
Is the mom fucking Josh?
Yeah, I don't know.
Should we just...
That's possible.
Say the answers. We find out later that like the mom... is maybe just using Josh for housework because she doesn't have a husband. Like, he's taking out their trash and stuff.
Yeah, and just, like, doing man stuff around the house, killing spiders. She doesn't say that, but that's the sort of... She says the trash thing a few times.
So it's like, is she just using this boy for that? Or is she into this boy? Is this boy into her? I don't know if this is the kind of show that's going to go that direction. Because they are, like, 16.
Yeah. I don't think she's into him. I don't think that's this thing.
I don't think he's into her. Because he seems to be into Ginny.
Right. Well, it's unclear. Definitely the mom's using him. Also, I just can't imagine, like, I need this entertainment center put together by tomorrow. I'll have my daughter's boyfriend do it, and I'll ruin their anniversary plans to get it done. Then you do it, lady.
I think we've kind of established that this mom is a bad person. Or not the best person.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Not perfect, at least, yeah.
Because this is, like, the real estate lady that was, like, trying to mess with Michelle earlier. Someone was like, don't ever go through her.
Right. Later, we see Michelle teaching another class, which is tap dance. And she just gets too tired. She's had too many classes. She's just essentially just like calls it a day. Like, I can't do any more tap. Fanny's not coming back. She finds out through Boo that Fanny mentioned on Facebook that she's taken like an extra week. She extended her vacation. So, and she didn't, again, she didn't tell Michelle this. So she's just expecting Michelle to pick up the slack. I don't want to talk about this anymore. It's just an absurd proposition that this woman is just making her daughter-in-law take all these classes, especially without even telling her she has to do it. Like, it's absurd. It's beyond. It's like infuriating how unfair it is to me, quite honestly. And we're supposed to forgive Fanny's character because she's like got a heart of gold, I guess. I don't know.
I guess we'll see.
Michelle notices that something is leaking in the studio. So she goes upstairs. Sure enough, there's just a leak leaking all over. So she calls Fanny. And this is all very funny. She calls Fanny to be like, what's going on? But she gets her voicemail and then she leaves a voicemail. But then she like is like, I know what you would say. And then just does a scene between her and Fanny, her taking up Fanny's like point of view and doing all the dialogue for both of them.
But it's like very funny. Good dialogue, yeah, and that she would definitely say.
Yeah. And like at some point she even goes like fourth wall-y a little bit. She's like, you're probably like, well, why are you acting this all out instead of getting this taken care of? I thought it was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
So out of options, she just calls the next person she knows in the town, which is Truly. And she just starts like ranting about the leak. And then Truly, after like a long rant, is like, hi, this is Sparkles. We do dresses. Yeah. That was great.
Do you think she didn't know who it was? Because she didn't really say.
I think she knew. I think she was kind of like, why are you calling me?
Yeah.
Truly also knew from Twitter. She had gotten updated on Fanny's situation. Like why she's not answering the phone, which is another day. Everyone in the town knows from social media what Fanny's doing. My favorite part, though, is that when they're done, Truly's all like, let me know what happens. I'm a part of this now.
Yeah.
And hangs up. Not going to help, but I'm a part of this now.
Truly's very funny.
So she calls a plumber, and that plumber is Zach.
From Gilmore Girls.
With a fucking eye patch. Again, seems to me Amy watched season 7 of Buffy and was like, I got to put some of that in my show. What about a one-eyed Zach?
But also, this episode of Firefly has a guy with one eye, Amy.
Yeah.
What's she doing? Yeah. Did this character really need to only have one eye?
I think we know what's going on, Amy. I think you did these two shows, and then you did the two shows we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't put in a connection that's very obvious like you used to.
Just to throw us off. So it's Zach. His name is fucking Davis, I think.
Davis, yeah.
We're going to call him Davis because that's his actual name in the show. Davis is a plumber and maybe not a good one because he's just like banging holes in the wall.
That's how they fixed our leaky issue.
That is actually fair.
You guys were here for that.
Yeah.
Super just came in, started punching a hole in our wall. Mid-pod.
Yeah. Truly then shows up and is all like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm trying to find the plumbing in here. The only way to do it is through holes. Truly's like, you shouldn't have trusted this guy. He's not good for plumbing. He's good for keeping an eye on stuff. And then she laughs. I guess that's a running joke in the town is that he keeps an eye on stuff for people because he's got one eye. There's also a funny line here where Michelle talks about how it's a family business and his like grandfather's on the truck. And then Davis is like, that's my grandmother. They look different back then.
I also love the girls come in and see that she hired Davis. They're like, no, we don't use Davis. People just hire him to keep an eye on things. And they all giggle. It's just like a joke in the town that everyone thinks is funny.
Make fun of this guy's disability. Anyway,
that's why I'm like, did he need to have one eye? He could have just been a dumb, bad plumber without the one eye.
Yeah, I know.
It almost feels like she was trying to connect it to the other one. Whatever.
So the girls are like, well, we can't dress in here because the dressing room is covered in water. And Michelle's like, well, just use the boys. They're like, no, the boys is just so gross because when they pee, they just go everywhere. I get it. Classic boys are dirty stuff. But this got a conversation going with you and I where I was like, well, how bad could it be? There's got to be so many more women in the women's dressing room, and just like how many boys are in this small town's ballet class? Like, what, a few? But then we see in a couple classes that it's like a lot of boys taking classes. Also, Michelle lists all the classes they're taking, which is just, there's so many classes that she's offering. And we may have mentioned this before, but how many people in this small town are doing ballet classes, are doing jazzercise or like the strip pole thing. Like, I can't imagine there's that many. They don't even have a movie theater, but they have enough people to fill all these dance classes with men and women.
I guess if it's like the only thing to do, you know, if it's like there's not a gym, this is like a way to exercise. And the classes are free.
I don't know. It didn't add up to me.
But the tap class was like adults, and there were men in that too.
I get that there would be like a desire for this, especially in a bigger city, but this is like some backwoods town. Like, it just doesn't seem like you would have enough.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like if and you know people that are doing it and they recommend it, it might just become a thing that people want to do.
Sure. Michelle tells the girls, you can just use my like house. What is it? I want to say her apartment, but it's the guest house that she's using. You can use my section of the house, my room, whatever the fuck her place
is. It's a separate little house.
You can use my living quarters to change. So the girls go in there and immediately go through all of her shit and just start judging it pretty hard. And Sasha shows up. Sasha shows up and is all like, hey, I didn't get in trouble. In fact, my parents rewarded me by giving me like their credit card to use. Very weird stuff. They find an old doll that looks like it was ripped in half once. More on that later, I am assuming.
Yeah, we really didn't dive into that in this episode. It's like a Raggedy Ann doll she's got tucked away in a drawer.
But definitely, like, there's more here. They also find, like, a sequined G-string. So when the girls are performing and practicing, the song ends, and the plumber, Davis, just walks out and starts applauding them and starts giving them some, like, some nice things to say, some accolades, but they're, like, not great. Like, he points at someone, he's like, I didn't think you were graceful, but you were. Like, all right, dude, it's weird. At this point, Davis is done, and Truly is also there, I guess, monitoring him. Like, she is up there with him and telling him he shouldn't be talking to the girls and not to be so loud. And then he's leaving, and she gives him shit about his job. He's like, no, it was good. I stand by what I did. Then Truly says to Michelle, you've got to dry the floors, though, or there's going to be mildew, and it's going to be bad. I'm sorry, I can't help you. I have to go. So then she just starts, like, using a hairdryer on the ground. This sounds awful. It reminds me of the spill I did on my desk.
Oh.
It's going to be a lot of cleanup. But while she's doing that, the girls are having their own drama downstairs. Melanie's brother shows up. He is pissed. If you guys don't remember, he has been sentenced to drive his sister around for a while, and it's just a couple days left. And he's pissed that she's taking forever because he rearranged his whole day for her. I buy their brother and sister back and forth, and honestly, he's a kind of a piece of shit. But, like, I do have to agree that it's probably frustrating for him when he's like, I don't even want to be here to help you with a ride, but I have to, and you're, like, taking your fucking time. Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's I don't want to see his side because he does other stuff that pisses me off. But, like, I do feel him on that. Melanie acts like he's being a jerk. Not for that thing. For other stuff, yeah.
Is that his only punishment? Is that he has to drive her around? He doesn't seem, like, grounded otherwise because he's got plans always.
Yeah. I don't know. But then all the girls are like, we're going to help you get rid of the mildew with all of our blow dryers. I think it's also funny because Sasha tries to get out of it, I feel like. She's like, I'm already helping because you're using my hair dryer.
Yeah.
After 3 hours of blow-drying the mildewed carpet, Michelle's like, we're done. Let's go get food. She suggests she's buying and we'll get whatever they want. So they go to Rico's, where they eat just like a ton of fried food. Just like a crazy amount of fried food. Having a great time, except for Boo's having salad. And this bothered me a lot. Michelle's all like, you should eat some of this food. You should eat some of this food. And Boo's like, nah, I don't want to. And Michelle just starts like secretly putting French fries into her salad while she's like away. And it's like a bit for us. Every time Boo goes back to her salad, she's like, oh, the salad's so good because there's fries in it. And this bothered me a lot. It really did for a couple reasons. For one, Boo doesn't have the body the other girls do. I don't mean that in any like mean way. The show has told us that. Boo has told us that. Fanny has said that. And Boo is trying to diet to get the body she wants. Michelle has lived this life where she is eating whatever she wants. Like, she eats garbage every episode. And she's got an amazing body. So they have different lives, different metabolisms, different bodies. And it's not cool to take away her agency and be like, nah, I'm going to make you eat something you have chosen and communicated to me that you do not want to eat.
Yeah, that's kind of very wrong, actually.
Yeah, it's really not okay. I get it's a joke, but like, she's trying to get better. And it's not like Boo is sitting there going, oh, I wish I could eat some fries. Oh, I want your fries. She's like eating her salad. And they're just deciding for her that what she's doing is wrong. And that's not cool in my mind.
I guess there's the argument that, like, I don't know, is Boo being unhealthy? Like, I mean, she's not. She's eating.
Yeah, she's eating. It's not like we don't see her not eating. That would be one thing.
Yeah.
But she's just being very clear about what she's eating.
Yeah. you do kind of feel bad that Boo is putting so much pressure on herself, though. Because, like, her body is beautiful, you know? She has, like, a good body. She's just not, like, stick thin like Sasha.
No, I agree. But I don't feel like the show has shown us that she's hurting herself.
Yeah.
Everyone's got autonomy over their body. If they're being healthy, there's nothing that anyone should say to them about it. Especially since I said Boo isn't, like, whining every second about wanting a bagel or something, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry. It just really bothered me that it's like Michelle is supposed to be this positive figure. Although this episode does suggest that maybe she doesn't know everything she says and she's a little too glib. Because Josh shows up and Ginny and Josh are joking and he's being super supportive again. He's like, oh, is this a girl thing? I'm interrupting a girl thing. I'll come back later. And like leaves them. He's just like the nicest boyfriend imaginable. But Michelle just starts like joking and kind of making fun of Ginny for like having been with the same guy since second grade. And Michelle goes on to say that she had such a good time just sowing her wild oats. But she made it seem like she was having a lot of sex with a lot of people. She turned her day into three different sex shifts.
At 16? I find that a little unbelievable. She was like, yeah, I was going on like three dates a night with all kinds of guys. I'm like, you were in high school. You didn't know that many guys to like be going through that many people.
Were some of those dates during class? I mean, obviously, if she's in Veronica Mars' Neptune class, for sure, you could date someone in one of those classes. But
she said, I think that they had all time frames. It was all at night, but it's like, you can't stay out till midnight every night on a date in high school. Like, did you have Sasha parents? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make sense. I don't know. I feel like 16-year-old
I think she might
girl,
have had Sasha parents, though, because she does allude to having a bad
I agree.
Parents later in the episode. But I do think it's impossible to have that much going on when you're 16.
It's kind of like Lorelai talked about how like wild and crazy she was, but she got pregnant at 16. Like she was a wild 13-year-old sneaking out and going to parties all the time. You know what I mean? Like you have homework and after school stuff when you're that age. You don't have time. And she was probably dancing a lot.
I feel like Amy just like has ideas sometimes and doesn't really know how the logistics of it would work and doesn't really care because she thinks probably most people won't sit down and parse it all out.
Right. But we do. That's why we're here.
Because there's like a lot of problems if you really break down the logic or timeline of all of her shows. I think she's more like, this is the sense of what happened. And people will pick up the sense and that's fine. And it probably is fine for some people, but I'm an asshole.
I do kind of agree with Michelle, though, a little bit. That like, it seems insane to stay with the same guy you've been with since you were 8.
Absolutely.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I don't know. I do think it's healthy to date at least a few people in your life.
Totally. Like, honestly, I feel like I didn't even know who I really was until I was like 25.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really defined who I was and what my wants were, you know, and being so totally self-aware until I was like 25. So the idea of finding my lifelong partner before that is like, yeah, I could have gotten lucky maybe, but like, I don't know that I would know who my ideal partner would be until I was 25.
Yeah, I think you probably are quite defined by your partner before you're an adult.
Yeah. That's not to say that if any of you guys have been married to your high school sweetheart or whatever for forever, good for you. I'm not saying can't work, but it seems a bit weird to be with the same person since second grade.
I don't think what Michelle said is bad.
Yeah, I agree with you, but she kind of like laughs at Ginny, which probably makes Ginny feel bad. And then she really like romanticizes her promiscuity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that's really what triggers Ginny for the rest of the episode.
But had she not been so glib about it, I don't know that it would be terrible advice to suggest Ginny think about dating other people. I don't know that that's bad life advice. There's kind of another funny bit in this scene where that mean manager at Rico's is like making Boo work even though she's off the clock. He like tells her tables need water and stuff. And then at the end of the scene, he's like, I need someone tall to get something in the back. And Michelle's like, you don't have to do it, Boo. You're not on the clock. And she's like, oh, you mean me? And then she gets up and does it.
Yeah.
This guy's got a lot of power.
Michelle goes home to find Davis and Truly making out in the changing room.
Ooh la la.
This is all pretty funny, too. As she's leaving, he's like, please don't leave a bad Yelp review. And Michelle's like, I wouldn't even know how to do that. She's set up. She's not a computer person. Truly is just crying. She feels super bad because, you know, her like negative comments earlier about this guy were probably because she likes him. Slash, maybe he's not a good plumber.
Michelle asked if they had a history. And I almost felt like they did. Because when she first walks in and sees that Michelle hired this guy, I felt like they definitely used to date.
Yeah.
But then she says the reason she was weird is because he's a bad plumber. But I wonder if they didn't have some kind of history. She never really answers her.
I imagine they do. But she feels bad. She explains that it's because she feels like she's like cheating on Hubble. This is all kind of fun too. Michelle's like, yeah, but you didn't date Hubble and he was also taken. So you can get over this now. Then the leak returns and Michelle sort of just like sits down on the ground and like sad passes out.
You really hated the way she dealt with the leak in the first place. As someone who just dealt with a spill, I think we handled it the right way.
Yeah, she just, it's like, go deal with the, find the problem. She's just like putting buckets and stuff down. It's like, it's over, girl. You're not stopping the water. You got to go find the source.
She was like trying to catch it in fabric when there was a bucket right there.
Yeah. She wakes up the next day to find that all of the girls, the ballet girls, the girls we know, not the little girls in the beginning of the episode.
Just the big girls, the medium girls. The teen girls.
They're all in her place of habitation. I don't know what we want to call it.
You call everything call it her an apartment. House. Just call it an apartment.
They're in her hut.
Oh, yeah.
They're in her guest house, which is her house. They're in her house. I'm just going to say, they're in her house, again, going through her shit. And she's like, what are you doing here? I said you could use this for changing before class. It's a fucking Saturday, which again, it is like, what are they doing there? And while they're there, they point out like, hey, we found like an open jar of peanut butter by your bed. Could you explain that? And Michelle says, you guys will understand when you're older.
And
so
I was like,
many questions.
I'm Michelle's age and I don't really understand. I mean, I think it's just for snacking. It is, I think. But I was like, is there something more?
So we got to break this down. Okay, so she does just have an open ass jar of peanut butter with like a spoon in it by her bed, like on her headboard. What, two episodes ago, we had a possum in bed with her and she thinks it's a great idea to just leave open peanut butter out?
Yeah. They share it. They're friends now.
Well, that is the next question. Because she says to the girls, you'll understand when you're older, which has like a sexual connotation. And there is that idea.
Brian.
That possum might be coming back.
For snacks?
For snacks. Yeah. Google it. I'm not going to say it.
What are we Googling exactly?
Peanut butter. Animal
possum
sex. I have not Googled those words together. I don't know that the results will be good.
We also find out that Fanny's got all kinds of rules these girls need to follow. Like she doesn't let them eat fried food or walk in sand.
Yeah.
I don't think we really knew that before.
I mean, some of the rules make sense as far as like if you want to maintain a good figure, you shouldn't eat shitty food or like fried food might make you sick. If you want to dance. So, like, I get that, I guess. Or, like, eating late. It's like a weight management thing.
Yeah. So, they're kind of a little bit digging the fact that Michelle is letting them do whatever.
But we do see the consequences of that. The next day, Melanie is sick because of all the fried food she had had. Ginny's fine, though. But I guess Melanie had way more. But when I say Ginny's fine, something has changed for Ginny. Josh shows up. He's like, hey, I was supposed to meet you after class. You weren't there. Ginny's cold as shit to him. She's like, whatever, I didn't say I beat you there. He's like, okay, but we've done this like every day. She's like, I don't care. You don't own me. Let's go fight in the bathroom. Well, she just goes in the bathroom to like ignore him. And he follows her in the bathroom to fight. And it's not clear what it's about, but they're having like their first, at least public fight. And the girls are like wanting to listen in. But it's very clear to us that Michelle's commentary about their relationship being silly or weird and how great it is to be single and young has had an effect on Ginny, and she's decided to break up with Josh.
Yeah.
There's a lot of girls with crazy ideas. Like, the next day, Sasha shows up wearing Michelle's shirt. Michelle calls her out on it, and Sasha's like, no, this is my shirt. It's not your shirt. But, like, Michelle's like, my name's in it. That shirt was given to me by Siegfried and Roy. I know that shirt.
It's a very specific shirt.
Yeah. And then Sasha's like, fine, you can have it. And it's weird. And then she comes later to practice late and kind of, like, makes a big deal coming in. Makes a lot of noise and stuff. My thoughts on this are that Sasha is like looking to be punished because she didn't get punished by her parents, even though she stayed out way late and ruined their car. They gave her a reward. So I feel like she's looking for some sort of validation. She's acting out to be scolded by someone to prove that she matters, maybe.
Yeah, just to like be noticed or have someone care that she's not doing okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she's like trying to provoke Michelle to be like a pseudo mom for her. Michelle stops practice when Sasha shows up late, takes her in a back room, and just, like, lets her have it. Michelle's upset for a lot of reasons, but one, because Sasha's making her act like an old woman or, like, an old mother, and she hates that Sasha's making her, like, scold her. And she's like, you're gonna make me wag my finger at you. Oh, my God, did I actually wag my finger at you? And it's pretty funny to see Sasha, like, solemnly kind of, like, sadly nod that she had.
I liked this scene a lot. I thought she acted it really well. Michelle Sutton.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like a long monologue about her, like, seeming actually genuinely concerned for Sasha, but, like, also mad at her.
Yeah, I agree.
But she was just like, I don't want this life. I don't want to be a disciplinarian. This is like, I don't like being the bad guy. I don't like being a mom. Like, this isn't what I signed up for. But, like, someone needs to fucking tell you what's up right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Sasha seems to kind of feel better afterwards. You're right.
She definitely gets in line after this and, like, comes to practice and just, like, starts doing it. And I feel like she sincerely seems like she's listening to Michelle when she's being yelled at.
Yeah. And she specifically says she doesn't have beef with Michelle. Because Michelle's like, what's your beef? With why are you doing this to me? She's like, I have nothing against you.
Right. Other people do, though. After practice, Jenny's mom shows up, pissed. She's like, whatever you said to Jenny made her break up with Josh. And Josh was perfect. He was like the perfect man. Most men are absolutely awful. But he was good. And she needed to hold on to him because she doesn't realize how shitty most men are. But now she's given up like the perfect man. And then she goes on to be like, you know, I'm a woman living on my own and there's so much I can't get done because I'm working to raise my daughter. And he took care of that stuff for me, like taking the trash out, which some of that is like, OK, you sound like you're using this dude for your own purposes and you don't really care about your daughter being happy. However, I mean, she does give the argument that like, no, my daughter had a good guy and she's not going to find that easily. She should have held it.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It doesn't seem totally selfish, but the like he takes my garbage out and like puts together my furniture for me. That raises the question of like, okay, you're using this young boy or like, are you into this boy? But he seems into Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we were wondering if he was maybe gay in the last episode.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that's what they're trying to tell us anymore.
I think they're trying to tell us that he's just like a perfect boyfriend.
Yeah.
So Michelle's sad. She goes back to her apartment to be sad on the couch where Boo's mom finds her. Boo's mom shows up on time, crazy. She knows what day it is. She is just firing on all cylinders today. She finds Michelle being sad, and the only way she knows how to deal with somebody or bond is to give them food and snacks, which is like exactly the opposite of what Boo wants. So she gives her some grape juice, which lasts for 7 hours.
Yeah, it's the tiniest little juice box. She's yeah. like sucking on it for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, that's like 4 sips.
It's always in her mouth, too.
And then she starts giving Michelle pumpkin chocolate chip cookies.
That sounds good, I think.
It does sound good, and it really works on Michelle. It makes Michelle feel better. Her mom goes on to say, like, you're making a difference. Like, Boo talks about you all the time and very positively. She loves that you're here. She's been so much happier since you've been here. So Michelle feels bad about what happened with Jenny, but, like, you know, starting to feel better about herself because of these words and the kind food that was given to her.
She's also, like, rubbing her hair, just kind of being there for her.
And then starts kissing her. And I was show is getting out of hand. No.
There is a funny joke here.
Yes.
Where she's very like, funny joke. I didn't even respect my mom. I called her Dev. That wasn't even her name. I just called her Dev. Yeah.
So what I will say, though, is like, I feel like the show's done a good job making Boo's mom feel real. But like Boo's mom, like her love language is like giving people snacks, which is not what Boo wants right now. So why is her mom just walking around with a juice box of cookies?
Yeah, I for her, maybe. I don't know. There's also another child involved. We just found out in this episode there's a little brother. Her love language is snacks, but unfortunately, Boo doesn't want that.
Yeah. And Boo is having a bad time right now. Because back at the studio, Melanie's brothers are like, Boo, I want to talk to you. Boo, Boo. Hey, so Ginny broke up with Josh, huh? Oh, man. I want to date her. She's hot. Can you pass that on? So Boo, sadly, and because she's the greatest friend in the world, she does tell Ginny, like, yeah, he's into you. Ginny's all like, oh my God, I never thought of him that way. I could maybe date him. I wouldn't, but like, maybe I will. I love that.
Yeah, she's excited at the prospect of being able to date other people now.
Couple quick questions. Okay, did Ginny, she's the one that said she had boobs earlier?
Yeah, they said that Ginny had bigger boobs than most. So that makes sense. She bounces.
Because they also set up, Melanie was like, my brother is super into boobs.
Oh, yeah.
So that makes sense that he finds Ginny attractive. So Boo is just super sad about this. I want to just give Boo props because, like, she didn't have to pass that on.
Boo is the nicest person in the world.
Yeah.
Probably to a fault.
Yes, I would agree with you. So Boo goes to her car, sad as shit. Her mom meets up with her. Michelle's all like, hey, Boo. And Boo looks back like, my heart has been broken. The world is ending for me. Doesn't say anything. Just gets in the car. And Michelle has a couple more sips on her endless Hanukkah juice.
Hanukkah? Yeah, because Boo's mom, Nanette, we learn her name in this episode. has just been talking about how great Boo is doing because of Michelle. And now Boo's just like, ugh, shut up, Michelle.
Totally.
So Michelle just like retreats into her house. Like,
I'm sure drinks that juice for the next 10 hours. It's two sips in that thing, guys. There's no amount of sips.
And Boo's mom just hands her the rest of the cookies.
And then they're off to go find her brother.
Yeah. So, Brian, did you like this episode?
I did. I thought it was pretty funny. It had a couple lines that made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, it wasn't maybe the best one ever, but I think it was better than last week's. And it had a lot of really funny jokes. There's definitely some stuff to pick apart, but they're getting to, like, the heart of the show, where Michelle is, like, I don't know, this sort of reluctant mother figure to these children, because she's kind of filling in the gaps where their parents aren't giving them what they need, if that makes sense.
Agreed.
Although not in Boo's case. She's just like Boo's mom in the snack department.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think I predicted even that she's going to like be able to connect with Sasha the most. Because Sasha's sort of the most troubled.
Yeah, it may mirror her life a little bit. I don't know.
So we're starting to dive into that a bit.
Yeah, it was fairly solid. I think giving that guy one eye was a little weird. Like maybe there's more ideas that Amy has about the one-eyed guy that we'll see develop. But I don't know. It's just a choice.
I don't know that it was bad to not have Kelly Bishop in the episode. I mean, I enjoy her, but her character is a lot. Like, she's sort of just the worst parts of Emily Gilmore without the occasional, oh, Emily, you can be awesome sometimes.
Without the money. Without the means to be that awful.
Well, like, every once in a while, Emily Gilmore will do something that's like, yeah, get him, Emily, you know?
Totally.
Or, like, Trix takes her down a peg. We don't really have that with Fanny yet.
No, and Fanny is just sort of like, you're doing my whole shtick and figure out how to pay for it. And it's like, she's solving all your problems, Fanny.
I mean, I guess we feel bad for Fanny because she, like, lost her career and then...
Her son.
That was the reason she lost her career. So her life's kind of sad, but yeah, I don't know. It was funny.
Yeah, it was a funny episode.
And sweet in places. Okay, should we move on?
Let's move on to a special segment we like to call Movies One of Us Has Never Seen.
As you know, we used to use this portion of the podcast to talk about Charmed, a WB show airing around the same time of Buffy and Gilmore Girls that neither of us had ever seen.
But now we're taking turns making our partner explain what they think happened in a movie that they have never seen, based only on the title and very little other information.
This week, I have chosen a movie that I think Brian has not seen. Brian? Have you seen the movie It Takes Two?
No, but I have heard of this movie, and I feel like I saw the cover, but that's all I know. Unless you're talking about the video game.
I am not. I have not seen the video game. So if you want to do that next week. Okay, so you have three questions, if you want. Is there anything you want to know, or you want to just dive right into the plot since you've seen the cover?
What is the target audience, do you think, for this movie?
Young girls.
Interesting. Not what I thought. Glad I asked that question. So glad I asked, because I thought it was about sex. So.
Yeah.
And I suspect it is not.
I can't confirm. Is that a question? Or?
Okay. Is it about dance?
No.
Glad I asked. That was mostly what I thought it was about. What else takes two?
One more question.
I'm glad I asked and found out it was aimed for children, which means it's not a horror movie. Because I definitely thought maybe it was the sequel to like a movie called It Takes.
I did give you a sequel last week. So yeah, this could have been It Takes.
Could have been like It Takes Two.
It Takes. What is that?
I don't know. There's a movie called It.
It Takes. Okay, what is your third question? I'm sorry.
I'm almost there. Okay. Is it about sports?
Is it about sports? No. Yeah. But one of the characters likes sports.
Okay.
Wow. You are not going to be close. I can tell.
I think I got it.
Okay. Let's hear it. What is the plot of It
I don't get any bonus information.
No. There's a key piece of information I would love for you to know, but I think it's best that you don't for the audience.
Okay. So this movie is a movie about kids at high school, and they are in a film club, and they're trying to make an independent film.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there's going to be some romance. It's not like a rom-com. It is a bit So they're trying to make this film that they want to put in a festival, but the principal's like looking to cut costs at this school. So he's like, what could we cut? What clubs? And someone's like, well, there's this club that only has losers in it. He's like, well, we'll just cut that club. And there's also there's some like preppy kids that don't want their stuff cut. And there's like a student council meeting and they know this cut's coming. So they propose a list of things that should get cut. That's what they tell the teacher. Teachers that get cut because they want like lacrosse to stay and student council and glee club.
Sounds very Neptune High.
And yeah, they're keeping dumb stuff like glee club. And we find out that like glee club is mostly just a place where they go and hang out and they don't actually do any glee club stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, we got to keep this, but get rid of this stupid kids doing movies. And they do, we see some fun scenes where they're doing like horror movies and stuff. But it's about two people in the group that start to, they have feelings for each other.
In the movie group?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like about them necessarily, but it's part of it. It's about the whole group of them. Like one of them is like a stoner and one of them wants to do sports, but he's in a cast, so he can't. And he's like their connection to the preppy kids. All right. I'm getting towards the plot. They make a film. It doesn't do well. It doesn't get into anything. And so the teacher shuts it down.
Oh, no.
And they're all sad. But then one of the students is like, listen, guys, we're a ragtag bunch of weirdos. And they find out from the broken arm kid who used to be popular, but now he can't play sports. They find out through him that this was all orchestrated by this group, you know, student council preppies, because they wanted to keep their stupid clubs. And so what they do is they meet in private without the teacher knowing. And they have to like, it's kind of like Dumbledore's army. They're like meeting in private to like guerrilla film another film that they film about how corrupt the student council is. It's like a documentary. Oh, wow. And they end up at homecoming showing this film. And there's a guy at homecoming who's like a visiting alum who's like a movie maker. And he's like, I love that. We got to make that into a real movie. And it like outs the whole student council and everything. So they get their club reinstated and Glee Club gets taken away. And student council gets disbanded and a new student council has been made. And the whole thing is like it takes two takes to make the movie.
Because they did the movie twice.
Yeah.
Got it. I thought it was going to be about the two people, it taking two people. But no, it's
no.
It's established
that this is for kids, so it's not about them. So that was long-winded, but it's a really long movie, but it's pretty funny.
So it's like a palindrome. It takes two takes.
Well, no, they even say, like, you know, no one gets their scene right the first time. It takes at least two. And so that becomes their motto. It takes two. And so that's why they do it again, and it worked. And that's what they name it. The name of the movie is It Takes Two.
The movie in the movie is called It Takes Two.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So what are we, like 50% right?
I think that's maybe the most wrong either of us have ever been.
Really? Because you said some weird shit for Carnosaur.
Everyone agreed with me that they would have said the same thing.
Okay. All right. Yes. A lot
Do
of feedback.
You want me to read the synopsis?
Sure, yeah.
A rich girl named Alyssa and an orphan named Amanda are two little girls who are identical, but complete strangers who accidentally meet one day.
No. Okay, I'm sorry. Identical?
Mm.
Are they played by the same actor?
No.
Okay, so this is a Mary-Kate and Ashley movie?
It is, yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, when you were like two identical, I was like, okay, it's either green screen or it's not.
Together, they form a plan to try getting a... Who wrote this? A child? To try getting Alyssa's father, Roger, to prevent making the biggest mistake of his life. This is very badly written.
Cutting movie club.
Marrying an awful woman named Clarice.
Oh, okay.
There's more to it than that. One of them is an orphan. The woman who runs the orphanage is Kirstie Alley. And the other one is a rich girl whose mother has died. Her father is Steve Guttenberg. And the orphans go to summer camp, which is very near where the rich dad has like a summer house. And they like literally bump into each other in the woods and realize they look alike. You know what's the weirdest thing about this movie? Is they're not twins. They're just identical people that happen to run into each other.
Okay. Just the genes laid out the same for them?
Yes.
Randomly?
It's never like, oh yeah, I did have a daughter that I gave up for adoption because I didn't want twins. No, they look alike. Like, The Parent Trap, the Lindsay Lohan movie, they were sisters that were separated at birth. Like, each parent took one. But no, they're just identical strangers who want their surrogate mother and actual father to be together because the woman that the dad is marrying is awful.
Got it.
Yeah, I was hoping you wouldn't ask who was in the movie, because I think that might have helped you a little.
Yeah, it should have.
So yeah, it's about the Olsen twins being the Olsen twins when they're about 9. It's actually a decent movie. It's cute. It's funny.
Man, I want to see my movie, though.
Yeah, I was hoping that the students would be making the horror movie It Takes.
No, they're just making a movie.
Your story was nice. It was very uplifting about people coming together to, yeah, you know, serve it to the rich people.
Well, what's weird about my movie is that all the actors, it's weird. This, like, every actor that was, like, a main part has been canceled since then. That's why you never hear about this movie. Like, all of them. They can't play it on any station.
Brian, your movie's not real.
No, how we treat it, is if it's not real. Okay? Kevin Spacey played the principal.
What movie did you think it was?
I don't know. I'm imagining, like, a red cover.
You were thinking, like, It Takes Two to Tango, and it was, like, a sexy dancing movie or something?
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh. Well, you did a very good job.
Oh, thank you.
If the job is coming up with a fake movie, but you did not do a good job of getting the right movie right. I don't know what the goal is here, but I think you still did a good job.
No, well, thank you. Great movie pick.
Thank you. This is Ben.
Movies one of us has never seen.
After Bunheads, we watched Firefly. Stacey, please give us a quick summary of Janestown.
So Janestown is about the crew of the Serenity going to a planet. That's how most episodes go. But this planet, Jane has a bit of a history with. And he goes into this thinking he's going to be in a whole lot of trouble. But it turns out the people on this planet actually find him to be a bit of a hero.
A bit of a hero?
A god.
Worship this guy.
Yeah. And some silly stuff happens back on the ship.
Yeah, honestly, some real silly stuff.
It's pretty silly. So it opens with Kaylee talking to Simon, asking him why he doesn't swear. He's insisting that he does swear, but only when it's appropriate. They're getting ready to go down to this planet. Inara has a very important client she's going to be going down to meet. Kaylee's like, have good sex. And Simon's kind of like a prude about that. Like, you can't just say stuff like that.
Right.
Meanwhile, Jane has just ruined sickbay because he's just looking for tape. He's just thrown everything all over the place because he's taping a gun to his stomach. Malcolm is like, we agreed there wouldn't be guns. Like, they don't allow guns in this place. Jane's like, well, I got enemies there. I'm going to need this. And Malcolm's like, I'm the boss. You're not bringing a gun. So Jane rips off the tape and then he just makes like the face that little girl who eats wasabi makes.
Yeah, just such a like a. Like a half an eyebrow goes up.
If you're not aware of Wasabi Girl, I'll link it. It's help. A little girl someone gave wasabi to. She's like, help. So they get to the planet. They say it's real stinky. I don't know why it would be, but maybe there's something I don't know about mud and clay. But this planet, they're known for making clay to make like parts out of. Like they dig for mud and they make it into clay. Do we know what they're getting here? Are they getting clay?
I don't know that we ever are told explicitly what they're getting, but they're meeting someone here to smuggle something. Maybe it's mud. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's said, but if it is, it's said like one time quickly.
It almost doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
River, Shepherd, and Zoe stay back on the ship. River, because she shouldn't really go anywhere. Shepherd agrees to stay back to watch over her, and Zoe is left in charge of the ship. The rest are all going out. Simon wasn't supposed to go, but they convince him to go because he looks rich, because he used to be.
Well, specifically, Kaylee is trying to flirt up the doctor and is all like, maybe he should come with us, mm-hmm. Malcolm. Like, he should come. And then Malcolm has the idea that, yeah, he looks fancy. We don't. He might look much more like a buyer for our fake, you know, reason for being here.
Yeah. And so Malcolm is just like talking about how rich he looks and how good he would be at this because of the way he dresses and just his whole vibe. And Simon's like, all right, I'll go. Just stop describing me.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like soft hands.
So they go and they interact with these mudders. There's the foreman who's kind of showing them around the mud yard.
Dressed like straight up fucking Hercules and Xena villains. Their outfits look cheap as shit.
Simon is pretending to be a buyer. He's clearly never taken an improv class. He's just very bad at pretending to be anything. I don't even really know why they needed to do that. Do they need to interact with these people? This is like not where the stuff is that they're trying to get.
Well, I mean, I think they need to kill time here to meet this guy. So they have to have some sort of reason for
story
being here.
Story for why they're
And
there.
I think just they're making an appearance in front of this guy so he doesn't like ask them what you're doing or like,
yeah.
You know, shadow them.
But Simon's just like, Yes, I'm a buyer. I'm going to buy a lot of it. Jane, meanwhile, is very nervous. He's, like, in disguise. He's got, like, a thing on his head. He's got goggles on, just trying to hide his face.
Because he wronged some people here previously, he says.
Yeah. And then they bump into a large clay statue of Jane. And Simon says, son of a bitch. Just funny, because they've set up he doesn't swear very much.
Yeah.
Jane specifically mentions that he crossed the magistrate of this place. Cut to Inara going to meet her client, who is the magistrate that Jane double-crossed. More on that later.
Right away, you know he's a bad guy. For one, they set up, I double-crossed the magistrate. We see him. He's all like, hey, Inara, you don't have to call me by my formal name. Only the people I own have to call me that. We also know from the overseer at the Mudder area that the Mudders are all, like, indentured or paid almost nothing. So this dude's a piece of shit. Like, he has slaves slash people that are taking slave wages at the very least.
Yeah.
Even though he's being nice to Inara, at least at first.
Book, meanwhile, has stayed back with River. She has got some notes for the Bible. She is just, like, going through it with a red pen. She's ripping out pages. She's like, the flood doesn't make sense. He's like, hey, girl, let's not rip up my Bible, okay? She's like, it doesn't make sense. I need to fix it. And he's like, you don't fix faith. It fixes you. Which kind of seems like whatever in the moment, but I think this ties in with the rest of the story at the end of the episode.
He doesn't explicitly say, like, it doesn't matter if it's not true.
Yeah.
Which I think is sort of the idea that
we
should take from it. But he's all like, it's about having something that you believe in and having that belief be strong enough that it changes you. Now, I'm just going to keep this short. I have issues with a lot of religions, all of them. And I feel like this is just not like believing. It doesn't matter that none of it makes sense, but let's follow its laws anyway because it transforms you. I just have so many commentaries to give on that, and I'm not going to. But I get that he's supposed to be saying something profound here.
So a little while later, River, I think, has had a change of heart. I don't remember exactly how she says it, but she's like, I took these pages out and now they're just paper and I want to put them back in the book. But Shepard is like getting ready for bed and he's got his hair down. He's got sort of long-ish white curly hair. And when it's not slicked back, it's very Albert Einstein.
Yeah, like very, very, like two Albert Einsteins it's worth of hair.
Pretty
like
much Albert peacock, Einstein.
Like an aging peacock.
And she just, like, freaks out. She, like, screams and runs away. She does not like this look for him. And then Zoe comes in, and she, too, is like, yikes, that's, I don't, what are you doing?
I almost wonder if they were like, we need a black actor to admit that this is a lot. not like a weird
race
actually, thing.
I think that probably is true.
Because Zoe shows up, also a black actor, and she's like, no, that is kind of some crazy hair. And I'm like, I wonder if that wasn't like, let's put this in the script so it's not like the girl's a racist or something.
Yeah. So she just, like, goes to hide. And Shepard and Zoe are trying to, like, coax her out. He explains, like, that his hair needs to be like this for his religion or something.
Yeah.
But Zoe's like, no, he's going to put it away. Don't worry. You can come out. He's not going to keep his hair like this.
But this episode goes from, like, their storyline goes from him being like, faith is a way to change oneself from within. And the truth of it is subjective to, like, you got crazy hair. Oh, I'm a scaredy girl. Like,
yeah.
Like, what the hell is the tone we're going for in this episode?
So back on the planet, the crew has, like, gone to a bar where they're drinking some gross liquid. And Simon kind of points out that they're basically drinking liquid bread like the Egyptians would make the Israelites do. Because it's, like, kind of all the nutrients you need in a cup, but it's also alcohol, I think, and it, like, keeps you full, but also keeps you kind of subdued so you don't riot, I think is the idea.
Yeah. But I think this is showing us a couple things in the scene. One, that once again, this magistrate is just treating these people literally like slaves, like they are being treated like slaves. But also to once again show us, well, I would even say there's three things here, that it's showing us that Simon is very smart because he knows about this ancient history and, like, what they used to do there. And two, like, reminding us that, like, this is so far in the future that these people are like, yeah, I didn't even know about that. And you said Egypt? What? Like, that's so long ago, it doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah. Also that this alcohol is very strong.
That is just such a funny thought that, like, stuff we take for granted knowing about our planet, like the Atlantic Ocean or Pacific Ocean, like just the continents, you know, basic shit. I know Egypt's not a continent. But, like, in some far-flung future where there's multiple planets, like, that shit probably wouldn't be common knowledge.
Right. I always think that's so funny. Like, I'm just thinking in Star Trek Voyager, there's a character that's, like, very obsessed with, like, 1990s Earth culture. Like, that's
right.
Just for us. Mm-hmm. Like, that's mm-hmm. such a specific period of time. That's not as far in the future. I think that's, like, 400 years in the future. Mm-hmm. But he would be obsessed with, like, a century, you know?
Right. It wouldn't be, like, 1990s. It'd be, like, 1950s through 2000s or something like that.
I mean, maybe it was a little broader than I'm saying, but it was just so clear. Like, they're trying to do a little fun thing for us when this guy would, like, really blend so much of that culture together.
But, like, we don't know about all the provinces and stuff about, like, England, where our past is from.
No. And I barely know anything about, like, the 1800s. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I know the Civil War happened, and I know, like, what decade that was. But I can't tell you the difference between, like, the 1840s and the 1870s.
Right. And I've been going to a lot of Nikki Haley rallies, and I don't even know why the Civil War happened.
Topical, like a month ago.
Well, I'm really, I really am interested in the culture of 2004, 1 month ago.
2004? I'm
obsessed with that period of time.
2024.
Yeah, no,
that's even
20 years ago.
More dated of a reference because we're putting this out like a month from now.
You know me, I'm a big political humor guy. I'm not.
So they're at this bar. They're drinking this strong alcohol that tastes
gross. Mother's milk.
Yes. And this little boy comes up just staring at Jane. And Jane's like, shake your head, boy. Your eyes are stuck.
Well, this boy recognizes Jane.
Yes.
And he goes and tells some people. We don't know that now.
Meanwhile, there's this fancier dressed guy kind of roaming around. I'll call him old Robert Downey Jr. because he sort of looked like him at first. He comes and finds them. He's sort of a liaison for the guy they were supposed to be dealing with because that guy's dead. And Malcolm's like, great, what do we do? He's like, I don't know. Lay low for a while. Get your shit when it's the appropriate time.
Yeah, the guy says, like, the cargo's all still there, hidden and everything. Deal's still on. But yeah, let's lay low.
Then a guy starts playing a little tune in the bar. You know, it's a vibe. It's a good time.
A guy, not fancy Robert Downey Jr.
No, just a regular mutter man. He starts singing about Jane. And the lyrics of the song indicate that Jane is some kind of, like, hero for the poor. Like a Robin Hood, stealing from the rich, giving to the poor. And then Jane reveals that when he was on this planet before, he stole a bunch of money from the magistrate. And in order to get his ship out of the atmosphere, he dropped some cargo and accidentally dropped all this money. So he is an accidental Robin Hood that these people have deemed to be this hero that they completely worship and have written songs about, what, like 5 years ago? How long ago was this? Jane's not, like, old. So Jane, like, runs out of the bar, only to find a whole crowd of people cheering for him. He runs back inside, and the bartender only wants him to have the best whiskey, so they just start, like, pouring drinks for him and his friends all night. It's a party in honor of Jane.
When they go outside, there's the little boy is out front. So that lets you know that that's why they all know it's him, because the little boy told everybody.
Yeah. There's also a guy that is kind of, like, listening all the time that becomes sort of a main character. I don't know that we say his name. He reminded me of James Marsden at first.
Yeah.
But it's not him. Like, the initial shots of his face, he looked just like him, but he's not. But he's sort of important. He's just one of the people on this planet that they give lines to that particularly idolizes Jane. He's important, though.
Simon, it's so funny. Simon just starts, like, losing his mind, and he keeps saying, like, this must be what it's like to go insane or to go mad. Because, like, the idea that Jane is, like, a nice person who people worship, some kind of hero. And the first time he does it, it's kind of funny. But later, I feel like he's, like, putting his hands on his head. Like, he's just, like, kind of losing his shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny. Like, the actor does a good job of being like, what? Or what?
I like his character a lot.
Yeah.
He's just such a fish out of water. And I don't know, he's funny.
Yeah, I think the show does a great job with all the characters. But they make a point of he's not a strong man, he's not a fighter, but he's also not a coward.
And he's smart.
Yeah. But sometimes you might make the smart guy a coward or something, but he's not a coward. He's not a good fighter, though.
Right.
Robert Downey Jr. Is very upset. He's all like, hey, is this your idea of laying low? And Malcolm's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm figuring out what's going on yet. He's like still trying to formulate a plan.
Yeah, well, he tells Robert Downey Jr. that this is just all part of his plan. And Kaylee's like, what is our plan? And to Kaylee, Malcolm's like, yeah, I'm still working out the details on that. I don't know.
She and Simon get very drunk very quickly because there's a lot of alcohol in there. Mud milk. And they get very flirtatious, and he calls her pretty. Malcolm tells Kaylee, like, we should get out of here. She's like, things are going well, wink, wink, hint, hint, I want to bang the doctor. And so Malcolm's all like, all right, why don't you stay here with the doctor? Keep an eye on Jane. I'll go do something else.
Yeah. Well, here too, Simon is, like, completely dumbfounded that Jane is so famous.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I reattached someone's leg one time, and I got a hamster named after me. Jane, like, gave some money to people, and he's like a god. Kaylee tells him that he's pretty funny, and then he's like, you're pretty pretty. And it does seem like he actually does have feelings for her.
Yeah, and then he goes on to be like, you're very pretty, even with, like, dirt and, like, grease on you. And then he corrects himself. He's like, you actually look prettiest when you're covered in grease and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is acknowledging that, like, the lifestyle she has is this, like, grease monkey. Like, her life is, like, not of one of those fanciful girls in dresses. And, like, he's acknowledging that, like, you're beautiful at your profession that you're good at. Which I think really hits a note for her.
Yeah.
This is when she's like, Malcolm, I'm having a good time. I want to bang this man. She doesn't say that, but that's the tone.
He can totally hear this, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know if Simon is putting it together, though. I feel like he gives no indication that he's like, oh, it is. Jane is taking full advantage of this, by the way. He's just sleeping with some fan, super fan lady that's there.
Yeah. The magistrate brings his son to Inara. He's not the client. His son is. He is 26 years old, and he has not become a man yet, as he says. The son is a good enough looking dude. I don't know why he's not getting some.
I'm confused. If everyone here is dirt poor, working in the mud ponds, I think anybody would be like, yeah, you want me to bang that guy to get out of here? For sure. This pretty man?
Yeah, he wears glasses. Are we to believe he's big old dork or something?
Glasses.
Like, she definitely, she's all that to him at some point. She like takes off his glasses.
And he becomes a man.
But the dad wants to like stick around and watch. I don't know. He like wants to make sure it gets done. I don't know.
The dad shows up with his son and is like, he's a virgin. Ew, it's so gross. Can you bang him so that he'll be a man? Also, why are you pouring tea? It's not tea time. It's bang time. And she's all like, what the? Get out of here, man. Tea's part of it. He's like, there's no time for tea. You got to fuck my son. He's like in such a rush to get his son fucked. Like,
hey, Brian's not lying, guys.
Like, yesterday he's all like, hello, Inara. We're going to do everything we can. And then he's all like, shit, it's noon. He's got to get fucking. Like, we got to go.
He's got to have his tea. He's got to get his feet rubbed. I have a process.
It's got to happen right now. I'll watch. She kicks him out. He's all like, I got to leave, but that's my thing. And then she tells the son that it's fine to have sex. It's not what makes you a man. It's what you do. And well, I guess she bangs him and then says that later.
We'll get to that.
I'm sorry. I've said bang a lot. I'll say something else. She
shags.
Makes love to him for money.
Yeah, they're post-coit, and he's all like, I just thought I'd be happy once we did it.
But the coit is over.
There is a connection here. Like, he says he doesn't, like, feel like a man. I think the connection is that Michelle also mentions that she doesn't feel like a grown-up.
Mm-hmm. And then he just takes a jar of peanut butter up, and the shit he does with this jar is like, okay, is this what Michelle was doing?
Yeah, he starts bringing in all kinds of rodents to do all kinds of things.
That doesn't happen.
The son is, like, kind of uncomfortable and embarrassed. This is where she's all that's him, I think. She's like, no, I'm very happy to be here with you. As companions, we get to choose our clients. If this was for your father, I wouldn't have done this. But he tells Inara about this planet's connection to Jane. He's aware of the lore, and he admires Jane, which Inara is also shocked to find out that it's Jane and not Malcolm.
Well, we should take a step back, because he's saying that, like, this guy, you know, is a hero here. There's a legend. He came here years ago, and he's here now. And she's like, oh, it's Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts defending Malcolm, being like, oh, he's just trying to be so noble, and he can make mistakes, but even though, like, deep down he's a good man. And then when the guy says Jane, she's all like, a what now? Like, record scratch. What now? A Jane?
But this dude actually really admires Jane because he is like one of the only people that ever stood up to his father. He also mentions that his father has put a landlock on their ship so that they can't escape this time.
No idea what that really is, but apparently it's a thing you can just put on a ship. Surprised that hasn't happened previously.
Yeah, you think everybody would be landlocking. Although this guy is rich, I guess. It's not super common.
But she's all like, should I get back to the ship? Because this isn't good. Also, Jane?
Yeah. Meanwhile, the dad is just, like, waiting in the hallway I don't know. He's in some dark hallway. My son's getting banged. What do I do while I wait? I'm planning on being there for it.
Wanted to hold his hand. It was a tough time for men.
And then the mutter foreman comes in to tell him that Jane is on the planet. So they go and they let this dude out of a little prison box. They keep their prisoners like in little huts on a pier or something.
Yeah.
And he has one eye.
One eye. That's just a weird connection.
They let him out of the box. They immediately give him a gun so that he can kill Jane. Because turns out this guy was Jane's partner in crime. They both stole the money together. But Jane also kicked him out of the ship with the cargo. So he's mad at Jane. You pointed out it's weird that they gave this guy a gun when the magistrate just held him captive for like 4 years.
Yeah. And he says, like, I'm not the one that brought you in. Like you said, like, I don't know if that's like a police officer brought him in and you should be mad at that guy. But I can't imagine this guy wouldn't just shoot the magistrate right now. It's dark. There's no one around. Why not? I feel like this guy seems like a piece of shit. But he's all like, I'm going to get revenge on Jane instead. But also, in the next couple of scenes, this guy seems very strong. And I just want to point out that if you just spent 4 years in a box where you can't even stretch your whole body out, I'm just going to imagine they weren't feeding him great. But even if they were feeding him the perfect protein shakes, like, you would have to, how would you possibly still be a strong man?
They were feeding him mother's milk. Probably. Yeah,
probably, but like, you would still need to work out to be strong.
Yeah.
And like, how do you work out in a box that you can't even stretch out in? Like, I don't believe it.
I mean, we make it work in our apartment.
Huh?
Working out in our tiny New York apartment.
What does that have to do with women? I'm sorry.
I didn't say anything about women. I said we make it work in our apartment.
I thought you said women can work in our apartment. And I was like, what the fuck? What?
Well, we make it work in our apartment.
Women get work in our apartment?
That's not, you know that's not what I said.
I swear to God, that's what it sounded like, even this time.
Well, we make it work in our apartment.
Yeah, we fuck any woman that wants to work.
I'm not putting any of this in. Well, we make it work in our apartment.
Do we? I'm the one that has set up stuff to work out. What are you working out in the apartment for?
I have a yoga mat.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how much yoga it's seen.
I have a rug.
We also have an elliptical that has never once been ellipted.
That is where we put our neck pillows.
Yeah, it's where our travel pillows and our wet workout towels equipment will go sometimes. Also, a lot of candles.
We put the paper towel behind it?
Yeah.
I have used it 2 times.
So if this guy's got all that shit in his little cubicle, I can't imagine finding room to work out in there.
So Malcolm takes Wash back to the ship. Wash is wasted. Apparently Malcolm didn't drink at this Jane party, but Zoe's like, whoa, you've been drinking? So Zoe goes back out with them now. They are going to all go get the cargo. They don't need her to deal with the hair situation anymore, so she can go do planet stuff. They go back to the bar. This is where we see Jane coming out with that lady, but Simon and Kaylee wake up on the couch next to each other, and Simon's all like, no, we didn't have sex. I wouldn't with her. Oh, no. This doesn't make Kaylee feel good.
It's one of those things that's frustrating because it's so clear from the way he's saying it that he's like trying not to get in trouble with the captain.
Oh, sure. Because he did just say she was pretty.
Yeah, but she takes it. I mean, he does say those words, but like, I think it's supposed to be clear to us that he's accidentally saying it. It's sort of like a reaction to be like, I didn't do something
as
I wasn't
like,
supposed to do.
That's her dad, and she.
Yeah.
Then they got caught.
But she takes this to heart and is all like, why don't you stay here? We'll go.
Yeah. So Zoe, Malcolm, Jane, and Kaylee are all going to go out and retrieve this mysterious cargo. And they're like, Simon, why don't you stay here and have breakfast like a rich man would do? So he just sits at a table. He's like, can I see a menu? And the bartender's like, a what?
Yeah, it was so funny. A what?
So a little later, he's finished his bowl of whatever he ended up getting. He's asking for the check. And the one-eyed guy shows up and just, like, throws Simon around.
Because he's been working out in his little bitty cubicle.
Yep. Malcolm and co. goes to dig up the stuff while Jane actually stays back to, like, distract the town with his fame. He's, like, going to give some speech or something. We don't really see them dig it up. We see them go out to the desert and then they come back and he's talking to the town. This prisoner's name is Stitch, I think.
Yeah, that's what I have written down. Stitch.
He shows up to the town square with Simon to just, like, publicly butcher him. And he also aims his gun at Malcolm. And he reveals to everyone at this point that Jane dumped the money accidentally and dumped him on purpose. So Jane is no hero. And right. he also, you know, didn't intentionally Robin Hood these people. It was just a big, dumb accident. He's a bad, bad guy. But this guy that I thought was James Marsden, who's been Jane's champion this whole time.
If he's anybody's Marsden, he's James's Marsden.
He gets in front of the gun and takes the gunshot that was intended for Jane. Jane just, like, throws a knife at his chest. But dude is strong as hell. He keeps fighting.
I mean, at this point, I'm like, are we serious right now? He gets stabbed and he's like, I'm still fighting. I'm like, you're not, man. You're done. Maybe he just doesn't see the knife.
Muttersmilk is strong. And then Jane basically is like, why did this guy do that? What's wrong? Why would you save me? And then he kind of goes on this tangent or this like speech to tell the people that they shouldn't trust anyone. People are selfish. Like, he's a bad guy. There aren't people like him out there that are just going to like give them money for free. That's like stupid to think that.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he pushes his statue over. No one really seems that fazed or mad at him, though. So they all go back to the ship. Wash, at this point, realizes they're landlocked. There's just an alert that beeps and says, landlocked. Their ship is programmed to have a button that says that. Like, it's you know what I mean? It's just a button yeah. that lights up and says landlocked.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not anymore. Inara walks in, and she's like, oh, any problems with the ship? And he's like, yeah, we're landlocked. But then they're not. It's all good to go. Turns out the son back on the planet, who's now a man, lifted the landlock. He's manspreading so hard, by the way. His legs.
You should watch this scene, guys.
All the way open.
He's like trying to let us know he's a man by how much he's spreading.
Yeah.
But then his dad like is like, oh. And then he spreads his own arms out behind him in the doorway. It's just like almost like he's mirroring his legs. I think it's supposed to be just like exasperated or something. But it's like, did the director tell you guys to do this?
Spread further.
Spread. Both of you spread.
But he says to his dad, guess you made a man out of me. I guess so.
Yeah.
Book goes to try to talk to River. She's noting up some other book, but she's like, just keep walking, preacher. So she's still not forgiving him for letting his hair down.
For having hair? Yeah.
Okay. Kaylee is talking to Simon. She's like, why are you always trying to like be so proper? Like, you don't swear. You'd never let loose like you did when you were drunk. He's like, well, it's the only way that I have to show respect, like that I like you and respect you is to like act this way. So I guess that's sweet. And then Malcolm is talking to Jane. Jane is just like shook by the fact that this James Marsden lookalike laid down his life for him.
Yeah.
Like that someone just believed in him so much. And I don't remember what Malcolm says here, but we think that this is sort of like paralleling the Bible thing that Book said before.
Well, yeah, because Malcolm is like, you know, it's not really about what you think or care about. It's about what's important to them.
Yeah, like they needed to believe this.
Yeah. And so I think that parallels what the preacher said about like it doesn't really matter what the truth is. It's about how the belief affects you, which I have thoughts about, but I'm just going to let it go. I think believing in anything without a reason to believe in it is stupid. And will only ultimately lead to bad things. It may lead to some good things momentarily, but ultimately is not something that you want to strive for. That's my thought.
It's kind of like Mistborn.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, making people believe stuff that's not true is a way of manipulating people.
Yeah. Like Doom.
Yeah.
Man.
Any other movies or books you want to reference?
It's interesting.
No, you're right. So, Stacey, was this a good episode?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked this one a lot, actually. It was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to see Jane have like a philosophical meltdown at the end. Because he's usually so silly. The premise of him being like a god was very funny. Because it was funny to the character. Not funny to the characters, but like shocking to the characters. So them being like, what the fuck, was very funny.
Yeah, totally.
The stuff with Book and River was very silly.
Totally unnecessary.
I don't even really get it.
They just need to kill some time. I don't know. They were like, hey, you look funny with your hair up. Can that kill 5 minutes of the episode?
I kind of liked the Bible stuff, just sort of tying into the other themes of the episode. But
yeah,
maybe I'm forgetting a line, like justifying why she actually was so bothered by it.
I don't think so. I think it just scared her because she's a weirdo.
Yeah. Are we going to find out that the people that were mean to her all had hair like that?
That would be interesting. They're all peacocks.
Just was all Einsteins.
I mean, I guess that would make sense, right?
Yeah. It's just like a room full of Albert Einstein clones from
clones,
hundreds of years ago.
All played by Mary-Kate and Ashley.
No. Too many connections. What are we, Amy Sherman Palladino? We did have some similarities, though. We got a guy with one eye. Mm-hmm. We got not feeling like a grown-up.
People eating disgusting stuff.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't like the milk, and they didn't like the fried food. They did like the fried food, but then they felt icky.
Yeah, and the fries were gross.
Yeah. Oh, also, they said that the planet smelled. They were worried about the dressing room smelling because of the mildew.
That's right.
That's about it.
So, which episode do you think was better?
I mean, probably Firefly?
So it's so weird because I feel like I might go the other direction. I might go Bunheads.
Really? Why is that?
I think Bunheads made me laugh a little bit more. And this episode had a couple things in it that just rubbed me the wrong way. Besides the fact that I take issue with the idea of, like, you should believe in something because belief in itself is good no matter what how true the belief is. So much about that I don't like. But just the whole, like, he's got crazy hair. It's like, girl, you can, like, read minds and shit and, like, understand people's motives, but, like, his hair frightens you. So that whole, like, thing was pretty silly for me.
Yeah, I hear that. Bunheads was pretty funny, and it did have some cute moments that I liked. But I just thought some of it was, like, I don't know. I didn't really think the leak stuff was that funny, or them drying the floor. Like, I just didn't really like the actual things that were happening on screen.
Yeah.
But I did like the jokes and the message. Like, her getting through to Sasha was cool. She actually apologized to Truly for, like, making her feel bad for sleeping with that guy.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to stick with Firefly.
I don't know. There's just a couple lines that really made me laugh and fun heads. Like, I'm a part of this now.
Like, yeah.
So much. Or, like, I called my mom Deb. That wasn't even her name. It's just what I call her. Mm-hmm. It's really funny. Also, a similarity we didn't mention was a child wanted to be recognized by their parents, even if that means disobeying them.
Ooh.
Yeah. And an adult figure thinking that something that's edible is stupid. That's a stretch.
What?
What's the tea.
And?
The French fries.
Mm.
And the salad. There's a dog barking in the hallway.
Oh, yeah. It's weird because I think this Firefly I liked a lot more than last week. And last week, Firefly definitely beat Bunheads for me. But last week, Bunheads was also a bad one, I think. So like, yeah. Firefly edged out. This week, I think they were both better. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard because Firefly overall is just a better show.
Yeah, I agree.
This experiment is not quite as competitive as the Gilmore Buffy experiment, we will admit. But
yeah,
I'm enjoying watching both shows. We're halfway through Firefly. There's 14 episodes.
And we've been rewatching Buffy, kind of.
Oh, that's true, because it's on Comet late at night.
Yeah, when we go to bed, it's on. And sometimes I'll be playing a game in the other room. So Stacey will just turn the TV on to kind of like cover it. And you like falling asleep to the TV on.
Yeah.
And it's Buffy. And sometimes we'll go to bed at the same time and you'll just kind of turn it on and we'll watch a little bit of Buffy.
Yeah, we'll catch like 20 minutes of every episode or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If you want to watch along next week, we'll be discussing Firefly Episode 8, Out of Gas.
As well as Bunheads Episode 8, Blank Up, It's Time. Did you remember this episode of Firefly at all?
Yes. When I say I remembered it, all I remembered was that Jane did something in the town and they all loved him, but he didn't remember why. That's all I remember.
Okay. I was going to say, I feel like the premise of this episode is fairly memorable. Like, the statue would stick in your mind.
Yeah. I knew that, and I knew everyone was like, what? But that's the only thing I remembered. And I knew it was, you know, he didn't actually do something altruistic.
Did you remember Shepherd's hair?
No. In the meantime, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the episode discussed in this podcast. What does your hair look like when you let it go?
When you let it go? He just took it out of his pony. How much fried food can you eat?
How do you feel about the scene where Michelle is force-feeding or secretly sneaking fries into Boo's salad? Were you like, that's fine, it's funny, or were you bothered?
How did that guy get so strong in that little prison hut?
Do you guys think there's actually a connection between these shows, or are we making this shit happen?
You believe us, right?
Let us know.
You can reach out by following us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok at Gilmore Slayer, where we post interactive questions, comedy sketches, and more.
Or send us an email at brianandstacyreviews@gmail.com. That's Brian with a Y and Stacey with an EY.
For more bonus content, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/Brian and Stacey, where you can watch our video recaps of Angel and Veronica Mars. We also post monthly podcast outtakes, share early extended episode previews, and host monthly live stream watch parties, where you can chat with us live. And shout out to our new Patreon subscribers, Scott Fraser Maskiel and DJ.
Thank you, and thank you, DJ. You're not. That's not an Olsen twin sister, is it?
No, DJ Tanner was their older sister on Full House.
Mm-hmm. And this is not her?
I don't know if
it's you don't know. Okay, so it could be.
It could be Candace Cameron going by the character she played on Full House, yes.
Candace, is that you? Let us know.
The boy from Roseanne.
Yeah, that's true.
Let us know.
For more of our content, please be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, also called Brian and Stacey.
If you want to support our content, you can do so by making a donation of your choosing via the link found at the bottom of our episode description or in our social media bios.
And if you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll give you a shout-out in an upcoming podcast. We've got to stop our parents from getting married. They don't love each other. They both suck.
Our parents? They're getting married?
Yeah. Both sets.
They're going to make a large couple, a group marriage?
A frupple.
A frupple?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it because our moms are both named the same thing?
Yeah. And men of a certain age can't see anything but a name. And so the moms are tricking the dads. We've got to stop it.
Why do the moms want it?
For the insurance.
Okay, I'm down. Let's stop it. This is a reverse It Takes Two, where we're trying to stop our parents from getting together.
That was the plot of It Takes Two.
No, they were trying to get their parental figures together.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I thought they were trying to prevent a wedding.
They're trying to prevent her dad from marrying an awful woman.
Uh-huh.
So that he can marry the woman who runs the orphanage, who's basically the mother of the orphan girl.
I'm glad that was clarified to me, because I missed that.
Yeah.
Well, then I think I found my parents getting married to your parents.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense for just them all to live together, and then we don't have to go more than one place for holidays.
Cool.
Are we siblings then?
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, maybe we should rethink this.
It's too late.
Yep. It's too late.
Bye!
We don't always know what to say here. Bye!